For KOSU News, I'm Michael Cross, and it's time once again for This Week in Oklahoma Politics with Republican political consultant Neva Hill and alive and well ACLU Oklahoma Executive Director Ryan Kiesel. The State Senate and House hit their first deadline with bills needing to be out of committee last Thursday. Ryan, were there any bills you were surprised didn't get a hearing?
You know, I think that there's one bill in particular that I'd like to highlight, and that's Representative Wesselhoff's legislation regulating the usage of drones for surveillance purposes by the government. Whenever Representative Wesselhoff and I first started talking about this 3-4 years ago, people thought that we were wearing tinfoil hats and that we were crazy and that we were talking about some dystopian future that was in a science fiction book. But in reality, I can walk out my front door and in the park next to my house, I could see a drone just about every day. Now, of course, these are drones being flown by private individuals. But it won't be long before law enforcement agencies and the government and other capacities will be using drones potentially for surveillance purposes. And yet again, legislators missed an opportunity to regulate when and where those drones can fly and how that surveillance is conducted.
And they've happened really fast, too.
It's happened really fast. There are enormous privacy implications here. The case law, the Fourth Amendment case law, is very quiet about this so far. And the legislature has an opportunity to work to draft laws right now to protect Oklahomans' privacy without having to wait on the courts.
Neva, any bills you wanted to hear?
Not that I wanted to hear. In fact, there was one that I think many folks thought the House might hear, and it was kind of refreshing that Representative Mike Christian in the Public Safety Committee didn't hear the bill for guns at the Capitol. I mean, that one, got, quote, shot down last session.
Like a drone.
Yes, like a drone. But there were a lot of folks that thought it would be one of those that would at least get its day in the committee hearing, and in fact, it did not. So I think that was a bit of a surprise.
Speaking of sometimes bills that people don't really like, the Greater Oklahoma City and Tulsa Regional Chambers are raising concerns about legislation getting pushed through the state capitol this year. Tulsa spokesperson and former lawmaker Sky McNeil says measures like the hoodie bill, abolishing AP history, and even anti-gay legislation give Oklahoma a black eye. The organizations say it's difficult to recruit businesses when negative bills are making national headlines. Neva, do you agree?
Well, I think probably the statement that I agree with most was one that Brian Bingaman made when he said that you can go to really any state in the union and find pieces of legislation that are both controversial and create headlines. And I think that's true. I think we're focused on what's happening here. Clearly, like we've talked about for several weeks, many of these are not ones that are helpful for business to go out and recruit or be around the country when that's the type of headline that folks want to talk about or at least ask about. So the good news, I think, is that in the legislative process, these things tend to come up early, kind of have their flurry of headlines and activity, and then they go away, and then they get back to the more serious matters at hand. And so I don't disagree with what the chamber's saying. I think it's just it's something that, as part of the legislative process, as both the speaker and the pro tem said, they can't tell these lawmakers who are duly elected that they can't bring forth legislation, no matter how nutty someone thinks it is or how unnecessary one might think it is, because a constituent or they themselves believe it's important and they want to advance it.
Ryan, now it was interesting, this Barbara Hobrock article that came out in the Tulsa World. Certainly the hoodie bill and those will make national headlines. But the fact that they actually mentioned the anti-gay measures as being difficult in recruiting people to come to Oklahoma, that's unusual that would already be mentioned.
Leaders in the LGBT community are in the private sector. Some of the best anti-discrimination language in the state of Oklahoma right now exist in personnel and employee manuals at some of our largest employers. They're the leaders on this issue. I think, a few points. We do have a disproportionate number of these bills in Oklahoma. As I travel around the country and I visit with other ACLU affiliates around the country, we routinely are either near or at the top of states dealing with bills that are embarrassing, just frankly embarrassing. A few points there. One, I'm really glad to see the chamber step out on this stuff. For years, it's been very frustrating to watch them behind the scenes try to kill some of these bills, but they didn't want to wade into the public political waters of opposing some of this. So this is a good signal. I'd ask them to reconsider some of the candidates they're supporting, because if you look at the political support record of the chamber, they've helped elect a lot of these folks that are running some of these bills. So that's out there. And I will disagree to the extent, to some extent, with Senator Bingaman's statement that, you know, we can't go around telling legislators what they can and can't introduce. But what leadership can do in the Senate and the House is set the tone for the legislative session. You know, these legislators are free and should introduce whatever they think they need to introduce. But they are introducing legislation that represents a very small minority of the electorate. And I think that they're trying to cater to that small minority of the electorate. And leadership, whether it's the Speaker or the President pro tempore in the Senate, they can shut these bills down by not giving them a hearing.
But I would disagree that it's a disproportionate number in terms of the bills that we're talking about. If we mention all of the ones that we would say fall in that category, is it a dozen? Is it 20 out of 1,500 or 2,000 bills that may be in the pipeline in the total process? I think those are just the ones that bubble up to the top that everyone finds it interesting to talk about more than others. But I would argue that it's not disproportionate to the total number across the country.
An investigation by a website covering the energy industry reveals earthquake experts have known for years about a connection between tremors and wastewater disposal wells. EnergyWire unveiled emails showing the Oklahoma Geological Survey met with state officials and energy execs who were nervous about dialogue connecting the two, and Oklahoma's chief seismologist was called to meetings with oil company executives and was discouraged from discussing the topic publicly. Ryan, what are your thoughts on this?
Politics are influencing science here. We are going to be wrestling with this issue for a long time to come, and the number of Oklahomans that are going to experience, you know, whether it's, you know, some sheetrock falling or, you know, significant structural damage to your house, maybe even some actual injuries that result from these earthquakes. And I think that, you know, despite the best efforts of the industry, we do have enough information to know that we're likely to have a significant earthquake in our state's future. Not only are we seeing the science stamped out by politics here and our lawmakers wringing their hands over trying to do something to serve the best interest of the people while not upsetting their special interest in the oil and gas community, now we're seeing the insurance industry not stepping up to the plate to fulfill claims. I think, you know, Commissioner Doak is reporting 9 out of 10 claims for earthquake damage are being denied. And so this is an enormous problem. It does pit lawmakers against one of the most powerful special interests out at the state capitol, the oil and gas industry. But if they don't do something soon, the people of Oklahoma are going to have a lot of damage that is going without any sort of a remedy.
Neva.
Well, I think let's talk about the special interest group, how powerful it is. But it's also the industry that really supports Oklahoma at the highest level in terms of jobs, in terms of its influence and an impact on the economy. And I think what you have is it's like a lot of these sensational issues. We could talk about global warming and have the same kind of debate and divide on, you know, who's trying to influence and who is saying what and who is pressuring whom. And really, I think, you know, what we've heard from the energy folks in this particular kind of exchange of emails and debate and dialogue is not that they have tried to suppress anything. They I think would be the first to come to the forefront and say, yes, there is an issue here. It requires discussion. But it would be ludicrous to think that either side is going to dominate or dictate. And I think that's back to what you said, Ryan. It is incumbent upon these lawmakers to get serious about bringing all of these different pieces of information and evidence, scientific or otherwise, to the table, and then thrash through it and come up with some ideas on how to move forward. But just this slash and burn idea of it's either or is where we come to this impasse, and I think that's really regrettable.
Well, and I think we got to be careful too. I know that and appreciate the significant impact that the oil and gas industry has on the state economy. I mean, there are a lot of jobs out there that depend on this. We've seen recently, even with our state revenue collections, whenever the oil and gas business is bad in Oklahoma, lots of things are bad in Oklahoma. I get that. But I think it's short-sighted for us to make this immediate bet today on what's helping us out in our economy and ignore the idea that what is happening with these injection wells in particular is causing earthquakes, and that these earthquakes are going to become more significant and it's just a matter of time before those damages increase.
And at one time do we say, well, people's health or might be in danger, but then there's jobs. So there's got to be that balance somewhere. You got to go, well, jobs don't necessarily outweigh someone's health.
And where do we reach the point where we say exclusively that this is the only thing impacting or having the influence on this particular issue? Is it strictly just drilling originated, or are there other factors? And I think that's where even science comes in, and you have to look at the whole preponderance of evidence, not just one particular sector.
The Senate and House are passing bills to further regulate the wind energy industry in Oklahoma. One of the House bills places limits on where turbines can be built. Some say it's an attack on the industry itself. Neva, what do you think?
Well, I think where we are with this particular legislation is that everything's on the table. I think I've heard that more than once stated. I mean, we've and this is the give and take that's gone on now for several sessions. I mean, we had bills introduced last session. The dialogue commenced, and then basically they were shelved, and now we're back at the drawing board. We have this issue with the tax credits, where the House clearly. I mean, there is a concerted effort by the Appropriations Chair Earl Sears and others who say, you know, we are going to get this done. On the Senate side, you see kind of the attitude developing of let's look at everything and let's come up with some sort of mid-range solution. I think even the bill that was passed by the House almost unanimously suggests that it would be a 70% reduction in the amount of tax credits for the wind producers. I don't think anyone believes 70% is the number. I think it's just the number today until we get further down the process and see where the negotiation gives us the give and take.
Ryan.
I think this is a good example of where lobbying matters and where your power matters. We're watching lawmakers, I think, turn their head on evidence about earthquakes, and you know, these have significant damage and impact. But now we're moving forward with regulation on the wind industry, which you know may very well be warranted regulation. I'm not an expert in the field, it may very well be warranted. But the driving force behind that is noise, and it might upset your scenery, right? So I mean, the idea that you could move forward with legislation because it will upset what you see in the horizon, but you couldn't. If there were legislation this session to regulate injection wells, which there is. I mean, there is legislation this session that would prevent localities.
I think there's some better argumentable points than that. I mean, one of them that has been mentioned and debated before is the private property rights, that come into play on some of these issues with the where the placement of these particular wind farms would be. So, I mean, I think there are a lot of issues out there, and I think that, again, we get down to any of these issues that are really tough, really complex, it's going to take a long time of give and take. And you're right. I think that's where the lobbying efforts of being able to make compelling arguments to the legislators about which direction they ought to go is really what's going to prevail.
Well, let me just take devil's advocate also, because I mean, from this group, the Republican Party believes that the government shouldn't be regulating business. And we're talking about more regulation on business. Isn't there a point where the Republican Party should go, well, you know what, maybe we should pull back on the regulation that we're doing?
Well, and I think there is that. I think there is that component of, I think we all recognize that there is going to have to be guidelines and parameters and regulations to a certain degree when you start talking about something that's this comprehensive that impacts the state. But I think that's where the rub comes, is that you get all of these smaller competing interests that then have to kind of decide, do we band together? It's the old adage of we better all get together. We might not. And I think that's what we'll develop with tax credits in general out there this session, is everyone will say, rather than one or two go down, let's all get together and fight, and maybe we can survive that.
But, I think the difference there is that what we see is that the strength of the landowners and the strength of the wind energy are much more on par with one another than the strength of landowners and property owners versus the oil and gas community. And I think that that's where you see the difference. And I think that that'll play itself out with tax credits as well. I think it's much more likely that we see wind energy tax credits, which may, at the end of the day, not be worthwhile. They might not be incentivizing activity that wouldn't otherwise occur. But they're much more likely to go on the chopping block than, you know, things like the horizontal drilling credit.
Right, especially like drones. It's a brand new industry. I mean, although it's not a new industry, it just boomed.
And if you're going to have an adequate regulatory framework, you've also got to balance that without overburdening the industry. And I think that's where the give and take really comes.
There you go. And Ryan and Eva's comments do not necessarily reflect the views of the ACLU, KOSU, its staff, or management.